Today's show is presented by Prize Picks. Go to prizepicks.com and use code PACKADAY for a $100 deposit match.
Minutes a day, 365 days a year. This is the Pack-A-Day Podcast.
Happy Saturday, Packers fans. Welcome in to an all-new episode of the Pack-A-Day Podcast. I'm your host, Andy Herman. You can follow me on Twitter at Andy Herman NFL. You can find the podcast at Pack-A-Day Podcast. Thanks for being here. I hope your weekend is treating you well. We should have a relatively easy, stress-free weekend from a Packers standpoint. Packers already have a win in hand with their big win against the Dolphins on Thursday Night Football. Got to watch the Chiefs clinch a playoff berth in controversial fashion on Friday. Of course, on Sunday, we get to cheer against the Vikings and the Eagles and some of the top NFC teams. But for the most part, should just be relatively stress-free. And we should just get to enjoy some really good NFL football all throughout the day. 7 hours of commercial-free football, then Sunday Night Football, Monday Night Football. Should be a fun few days here. And before you know it, it's going to be Packers-Lions, which I think has the ability to be potentially the game of the year. I said that about the Dolphins too. It didn't end up happening that way, but I really truly believe this one could be in Detroit, and hopefully we get some fireworks and incredible action in that game. I'm looking forward to it a ton. Before we get into our main topic, shout out to our brand new Pack-A-Day Podcast YouTube members, Andrew Ewert, Promise Gaming, Captain Kebbles, Kelvin Filer, Brett, Jeff Boisvert, The Nerf Ninja, Chris N., Rodrigo Valerio, George Beers, and Andres MX. Thank you so much for signing up. If you haven't yet checked out those Pack-A-Day Podcast memberships, make sure to do so. Or just like, subscribe, comment, give those five-star reviews. Those little things help the channel so incredibly much, and we always appreciate your support here at the Pack-A-Day Podcast. It does go a very long way. All right, let's get to some news and notes from Friday. The first thing is that we got some good news on the injury front. It does not seem like Corey Ballantyne's injury is going to be anything serious. Matt LaFleur said he thinks that they maybe just bumped knees and that it, you know, he doesn't know or have a feel for what that's going to mean for Thursday, but was pretty confident it wasn't going to be anything long-term for Ballantyne, which is great news. You know, when you get a knee injury at first, you're never quite sure. He was down on the ground for a while. So thankfully it does not sound like it's going to be anything long-term for Ballantyne. We'll have to kind of keep an eye on whether or not he can potentially play next Thursday and what his injury status looks like, but that is good news. And Matt LaFleur also mentioned that, you know, coming off a short rest and having to play on Thursday following the Sunday game, that the team came out healthy. He said he didn't know, he didn't talk to everyone or anything like that, but it seemed like, and just kind of reading between the lines here, that there were no major injury concerns that Matt had at front of mind coming out of that game, which would be huge news. And we saw like how many Miami Dolphins went down injured in that game. It felt like 20. Like it was probably legitimately, what, like 8 and somewhere around there. And, you know, you never know on short rest like that what that's going to do. It does seem like Green Bay mostly got out of that, you know, with relatively great injury news. And that's, you know, one of the big things. Yes, it's nice getting those two wins in, 4 days? But, you know, coming out of it healthy is a huge piece of that as well. And it seems like Green Bay mostly did that. All right, just a fun couple, you know, pieces of statistics here for you before we get into our main topic. It's always funny. I will post things on social media once in a while, just as like a fun observation. And usually thinking like, oh, this will get like, yeah, I'm not even like thinking about engagement or anything. I was like, this is kind of an interesting way to look at it, or just like an interesting anecdote or whatever, right? Just like observation, just bleh, just spit it out there. And it's always like the weirdest things that have like go viral. And this one, for whatever reason, went like semi-viral. And I never in a million years would have expected it to. It was just kind of like a stupid throwaway, you know, kind of comment. But the Packers are 4-1 since bringing in Robert Saleh as a consultant. The Jets are 1-5 since firing him. Now, I don't necessarily believe that there's any sort of correlation here. I think had the Packers not brought in Robert Saleh, I think they're 4-1. Like, I think that's probably the exact same record. And if the Jets had kept Robert Saleh, maybe their record's slightly better, right? Maybe they're 2-4, you know, in that time. Maybe they're 3-3. I don't think they're 0-6. I think they're probably a little bit better. It probably wouldn't have mattered, right? The Packers were a good football team. The Jets were a bad football team before Robert Saleh left and came to Green Bay. After he left and came to Green Bay, like it's just two sort of separate things, right? But it's just kind of interesting. It was just a fun, like random, stupid observation. And those apparently do very well when it comes to going viral, I guess. But I mean, and then of course I get the millions of comments of like, well, they don't really have anything. No, I wasn't saying that they did. It was just like an interesting, like stupid observation. It's all it was. It's fun to talk about though, nonetheless. Packers, I think I will say this. Anytime you can get smart people in the building, you always want smart people in the building, whether that's in the front office, whether that's as a consultant, whether that's as a scout, like however you can get them in the building, the more smart people you can have, the better your team's going to be, the better your organization is going to be. I think Robert Saleh is a very smart individual. I think he has a lot of experience in the NFL and that he can use a lot of that experience to help Green Bay. And in whatever capacity he's using it, I know Matt LaFleur remains adamant that it's on the offensive side of the ball. It doesn't hurt, right? So I don't really think, again, that it's had any real correlation on Green Bay's record, but it's just kind of a fun, again, stupid throwaway. 4-1 since Robert Saleh joined the Packers, 1-5 since the Jets fired him in New York. Another interesting just sort of statistic I threw together, Jordan Love over his last 17 games that he's played in, which includes the playoffs last year, the end of last season, and the games that he's played in so far this season. If you take that 17-game stretch, which again, it's always fun to look at it from a 17-game stretch because that's what a regular season schedule is, right? 17 games. So over his last 17 games that he's played, both regular and postseason, 328 completions on 495 attempts, 66.3% completion percentage, 4,059 yards, 34 touchdowns, 13 interceptions, a 103.4 quarterback rating. So 66% completion percentage, over 4,000 yards, 34 touchdowns, 13 picks, 103.4 rating. Like those are some very, very good numbers over the last 17 games. So again, to say that like Jordan Love isn't living up to anything, whatever, like that's a pretty good stretch, especially when you consider he missed a half of that game, a half of one of those games with an injury, right, against Jacksonville. When you consider that he played, what, two or three of those games where he wasn't anything remotely close to himself because of the injuries that he had, a pretty good stretch over the last 17 games for Jordan Love. If you just take those stats and put them into 2023, obviously we don't have a full 17-game stat sheet for 2024, but if you plug those numbers into 2023, he would have been ninth in yards, second in touchdowns, fourth in quarterback rating. So pretty good for Jordan Love over those last 17 games. The Packers are 11-6 in those last 17 games, which are not a quarterback stat, but the Packers as a team are 11-6 during that 17-game stretch with Jordan. All right. Meanwhile, I think the big piece of news, I should say, from Friday was really the Bears firing Matt Eberflus. Single tier. I'm going to miss him, man. I'm really going to miss him. I just talked about it yesterday. Bears never listen to me. They really should. They should. Actually, they probably shouldn't. But, man, it was really, really fun to see him lose games in new and exciting ways every single week. What a crazy couple weeks for Thomas Brown, who goes from relative anonymity to offensive coordinator to interim head coach in like a blink of an eye. That's quite the promotion in just a very short period of time. But they'll get a look at him and what he looks like as head coach. And they're obviously going to go in a different direction. We'll see how far they tear this thing down. My guess is probably just head coach and, you know, obviously the coaching staff, but it's going to be another massively important offseason for Chicago. There's one thing I can absolutely guarantee you that's going to come out of this is that no matter what happens, the Bears fans in July, August, and right up until the start of the season will be 1,000,000% convinced that this is the time. This is the hire. This is what's going to put it all together. And that's now the Packers' time is coming and the Packers are screwed and it's doom and gloom for Green Bay. Look out. This new head coach is going to... All right. We'll believe it when we see it. But we are, I will tell you, Chicago Bears fans, we are going to miss Matt Eberflus. But you know what? We miss Matt Nagy. We miss Dick Geron. We really miss Mark Trestman. We miss Mitch Trubisky. We miss Jay Cutler. You know, we miss Rex Grossman. And you just kind of keep doing the same thing over and over in these beautiful, beautiful cycles. So whatever, you know, coach you want to bring in next and whatever quarterback you want to ruin next, like the Green Bay Packers will be here continuing their consistency and you just go have your fun on the side and we'll just kind of keep an eye on you from afar. It's kind of cute that you keep the, you know, winning the offseason every year, but we will miss you, Matt Eberflus. And, now, in all sincerity, though, big move for Chicago. They will definitely have an opportunity to go out and get this one right. I don't have any confidence that they will, but you would think like by accident, one of these times they're going to, you know, stumble upon something that could, you know, potentially be successful, right? You would think we'll have to wait and see, or they could just get it completely wrong again, which is probably the odds on favorite at this point in time, based on the Chicago Bears' recent history. Malcolm Rodriguez, the linebacker for the Lions, he tore his ACL and is out for the year, so obviously will not be playing against Green Bay this upcoming Thursday. And that brings us to our main topic for today. And that topic is, Are the Packers peaking at the right time? I've heard a lot of this over these last couple days. I heard a lot of the questions in the post-game press conference to Matt LaFleur. Are you playing your best football? Are you guys hitting your stride? Are the Packers peaking at the right time? Like all these different versions of the same thing, right? Let me start by saying I'm not quite there yet. I think a couple things. I think one, they won against the Bears, the 49ers practice squad, and the Dolphins in the cold, all right? Those teams have a combined 14 and 21 record. And while I'm not in the, well, they were, you know, they're tainted wins or we should have to apologize because, you know, no, nothing like that. They played good football, maybe not so much against Chicago. They got away with the win. I thought they played well against San Fran. I thought they played really well against Miami. And they went 3-0 in those games. And they won them in all very different fashions, right? So I think those are positive things to take away. I'm not discounting those wins in any real significant way. But I am saying, like, I don't think we got a real glimpse of, like, oh, yeah, like they beat the Bills or the Chiefs or the Lions or the Vikings or someone like that, right? The Ravens. I don't think they beat an upper echelon team in that stretch. And I think they were, you know, like part of the reason that they looked a little bit better is because, you know, I don't think these teams played very well. In fact, I would argue of these three games, it might have been Chicago that actually played the best out of Chicago, Miami, and San Francisco, which is a crazy thing to say because they just fired their coach. So I think a lot of what we're seeing and some of the trending in the right direction, I'm not saying it's not real. I'm not saying it's fool's gold. I'm not saying anything like that. I'm just saying let's kind of wait and see. And I think we're going to get a really good test against Detroit this Thursday to see which of the things that we have been seeing in these past 3 weeks are real and which ones are maybe a little bit flimsy and are going to have to hold up against the Lions team that will take advantage of any weakness that you might show. And those weaknesses, if they are still there, are about to get magnified in a major way when you go against a team like Detroit, right? So I think we're going to learn a lot more in just that one Lions game than we learned in anything these past 3 weeks. That being said, regardless of opponent, just looking at the film, watching the tape, and watching this team extremely close, I do think there are 10 things that show that this team is trending in the right direction, that they are potentially looking to peak, if not now, like it may be right around the corner. I think there's a lot of things that are trending in that right direction. So today, let's look at those 10 things that maybe do lead to Green Bay, whether, and hopefully it's not now, right? We don't want Green Bay to peak on November 30th. We want them to peak come playoff time. And I think that's the good news here is I don't think they've entirely peaked yet. I think there's still a long way for this team to go. I think there's a lot of development to be had. I think there's a lot of lessons still to be learned. And I think they're still finding that perfect rhythm and calculus and chemistry for this team to make it click the way that I think we all believe that they can ultimately click, you know, when they're really, you know, just working on all cylinders, right? So I'm hoping that that happens down the road. But these are the things that give me hope that if it's not here now, that it may be right around the corner. And number one on my list is the health of Jordan Love. We talked about the last 17 games, right? And what his numbers look like in those 17 games. In the past three games, since coming off the bye week, since really coming off that injury, 47 of 68, 69% completion percentage, 698 yards, 5 touchdowns, 1 interception. And I would say one bad turnover-worthy decision, which was the throw that Christian Watson had to break up against the game before the Dolphins. I'm already blanking on against the 49ers, right? So where Watson had to break that one up. One poor decision in the last 3 weeks, one bad throw where he overthrew Tucker Kraft against the Bears and that play resulted in an interception, right? But if you're talking about a 3 week period of decision making and you know, just accuracy with the football, when it comes to interception type plays, one bad decision, one bad throw, I can very easily live with that in a 3 week period, pretty much every single time. That's a good overall outcome, I think, for Jordan. You add 5 touchdowns and a 69% completion percentage on top of it. You feel very confident about the way that Jordan's playing. But more than just statistically, and even more than just his decision-making, he looks like Jordan Love. And I thought when he was injured and hurt, just the mobility being where it was at, is he just looked like half version of himself. I think the play where he gets pressured immediately on the third down and rolls out and finds Jaden Reed, and Jaden Reed makes that great one-handed catch. Like, that's what we see from Jordan, right? The ability to, you know, maybe see that pressure, avoid that pressure, roll out, buy time, and keep his eyes downfield and make those big plays. I think that's the Jordan Love that we were missing. We also missed a Jordan Love that had the full offense at his disposal. that was having to do a lot of shotgun and pistol to be able to, you know, not have to get under center and turn his back and do a lot of mobility stuff, right? The bootleg kind of got out of the system a little bit. And I think in some ways it helped Green Bay sort of develop this run game out of shotgun and pistol and all the different motions and the spinning and everything like they're doing there. I think it helped them sort of develop that. And I think now they have different layers of run game to their offense, which is a good thing. I'm sure a lot of that stuff was in there already, but I think it forced them to focus on a little bit more. Could end up paying off because it feels like they have a very diverse run game at the moment, which is a very great thing to have. But I think that all comes back to Jordan Love being healthy and him being able to play under center, play in pistol, play in shotgun, roll out, get to any spot that he needs to on the field, avoid pressure. And that just leads to the offense looking like it's supposed to and Jordan looking like it's supposed to. And if, let's just be real, right? If this team wants any legitimate chance of making a push towards the Super Bowl, it's going to take not only a healthy Jordan Love, but a really freaking good Jordan Love. And I think when you're healthy and confident and playing the right way, that's going to give you that ability to play at that high level. And hopefully that's what we see from Jordan from now through the remainder of the season and hopefully Super Bowl run towards that January and February months. We finally made it. It's Thanksgiving week, and that means even more football to digest all throughout this wonderful week. Miami's coming to Green Bay for an epic matchup on Thursday Night Football. And let's just say it, Jordan Love is owed a turkey leg this year. But that's not all we're looking forward to this week. We're also looking forward to another winning week on Prize Picks. And with Prize Picks, you can win up to 100 times your money with as few as 4 correct picks. And right now, when you sign up, you get $50 instantly when you play $5. You don't even need to win to receive the $50 bonus. It is guaranteed. Now, Prize Picks is the best way to win real money this football season. Which players are going off, which ones aren't, make your picks in fewer than 60 seconds and turn your sports opinions into real money all season long on Prize Picks. Now, this week, I am going with Tyreek Hill against Green Bay. Yes, you heard me right. I'm going with Tyreek Hill against Green Bay. I'm also going with Tucker Kraft against Miami's defense. Then on Sunday, I'm going with James Cook against San Francisco on Sunday Night Football. And I expect both Jalen Hurts and Lamar Jackson to put on a show in the Sunday afternoon slot. The best part is there are a ton of options out there for you to choose from. So what are you waiting for? Download the app today and use code PACKADAY to get $50 instantly after you play your first $5 lineup. That's the Prize Picks app using code PACKADAY to get $50 instantly after your first $5 play. Prize Picks. Run your game. All right, number two. Talked about this one as a prerequisite to being a legitimate Super Bowl contender, and that's pressure up front. And it can't just be with blitzing. It's got to be able to get there with four guys. And I'm not all in yet. I'm not saying, yep, job done, problem solved, everything's good, everything's fixed. But we have seen a lot more signs from this defensive front over the past couple weeks, and especially this past week. You had Quay Walker with a sack, Kenny Clark, Kingsley Enagbare, Brenton Cox, LVN. There was also that other sack that got ruled off because of Rashawn Gary being offsides, which didn't actually help the play, but it just wiped out that big sack. Could have easily been six sacks. Aaron Mosby had that great tackle for a loss behind the line of scrimmage. So we're starting to see this defensive line get better penetration, make better reads, play more physical, and get off of blocks better. LVN's a great example of that in some of the plays that he's made. I've seen some flashes from Kenny Clark of some vintage Kenny Clark moments. Like, this is exactly what we're looking for. I still want to see more from LVN. I want to see more, especially from Devontae Wyatt. I want to see more from Rashawn Gary and Kenny Clark, but the signs are there. That is a great thing. And to the point where, like, I think if the defensive front plays like they did, I'm not saying they have to finish it with five sacks or whatever, but just plays to the level of disruptiveness that we saw this past week, or disruption that from this past week, I think that's an acceptable version that can get you to where you want to go. Ideally, it'd be better, but I think that's a good, that's a baseline level. If you're getting that sort of pressure, I think you're in a pretty good spot. So much, much better from Green Bay. Now that's a standard. Can you do it against a very good Detroit Lions offensive line this week? I think that's going to be a great litmus test, but we have seen that front play much, much better and get a little bit more consistent pressure throughout the course of the game. Number three, I talked about quite a bit yesterday, so I'm not going to go into it in a ton of detail here, but just the play of Quay Walker. I mean, anytime you have a potential, and I'm just saying still a potential breakout for a player, or that light bulb going off or a turning of a corner, whatever, you know, cliche, you know, phrase you want to use there, it has the ability to be super impactful. And you never know when these things are going to come. You never know who it's going to be. Like, it just, sometimes it just feels like, all right, now you're good. And like, there's no rhyme or reason sometimes, but Quay Walker stepping up and playing significantly better football over these past 2 weeks is just signs for hope and optimism that that's the linebacker that he can be moving forward. And there's a long way to go. I want to see that consistency out of Quay, but we got to see it. We got to see what he's capable of. And I think these last 2 weeks, I said it the other day, are proof of concept for Quay Walker and what he can be as a big-time middle linebacker. And if he can continue that, that is a great sign. But I think players themselves individually kind of peaking at the right time will help the entire team peak at the right time. And this is the dude that is in the dead center of this defense, right? Like that whole middle of the field area, that's Quay territory. All right. And if he's struggling, that whole middle of the field becomes a lot easier for opposing offenses to take advantage of. And if Quay's playing well, it makes it a whole lot harder. Add in, you know, what he's able to do shooting into the backfield, get pressure as a blitzer, 6 pass rushes, 4 pressures from Quay Walker this past week per PFF is a big time step in the right direction. And if he can continue to play well, that is another sign that this team can be peaking at the right time. Number 4, the defense as a whole. You talk about the defensive front, Quay Walker on the second level. I think the defense as a whole is showing signs that it's really starting to gel. The last 4 games, points allowed by the defense. Now, this does not include like the Kirby Joseph pick 6, right? Because that's on the offense. But just defensive points allowed. 17 points, 19 points, 10 points, 17 points. An average of 15.8 points allowed per game over the last 4 weeks. And the expectation is if you're allowing 15.8 points per game and never allowing more than 19, the Packers should be, you know, should win every single time in that scenario. And they didn't. They lost to the Lions in large part due to a pick 6 and the offense not playing well in that game. But that's going to get you a win the vast majority of the time. If you want, again, a sign that Green Bay can go on a run, and we again know that the Bears offense and the 49ers offense with a backup quarterback, not exactly your 1A examples of peak offensive efficiency, right? But overall, when you're allowing less than 20 points per game over the last 4 weeks, in fact, 15.8 points per game, that gives you a clue of just how much better this defense is playing. And I'll add on top of that, the run defense during this stretch too has looked so much better. I mean, especially these past 2 weeks. I mean, it just looks like there is a much better physicality and ability to fill gaps and hold up at the point of attack, get off of blocks and make plays. Guys are rallying to the football. The linebackers, as mentioned, like Quay Walker, are playing better. I thought Isaiah McDuffie was all over the place this past week. That's a huge sign as well. So just this Jeff Hafley system, first-year defensive coordinator, took maybe a little bit of time to gel together. It looks like they're getting much better now and playing a much better brand of football and really limiting teams to a much lower point production than we're sort of used to here in Green Bay. Number 5, the overall health of the team. Now, Romeo Doubs out with a concussion, right? Edgerrin Cooper's got a little bit of a hamstring issue. Luke Musgrave, Jordan Morgan, Marshawn Lloyd, all on IR. And then you've got Jair Alexander with, with his injury too, that he's trying to recover from the PCL injury. The Jair one is very concerning, right? I do think they're going to need Jair come playoff time if they really want to make this push, right? Now he's got a lot of time. You know, he hopefully has enough time to recover before then and hopefully can even get back before then, but that's a big one. But Romeo Doubs should come back from his concussion. Edgerrin Cooper should be back from his hamstring. Shouldn't be a super long thing. Luke Musgrave, Jordan Morgan, Marshawn Lloyd. Lloyd and Musgrave, they've already talked about hopefully being able to return at some point. Morgan, hopefully the same thing, right? So like there's a world in which by the end of the season, all of these guys are healthy to some extent with the big question still being Jair. And now there will be more injuries that kind of come up and we'll see what happens with Corey Ballantyne as well. But it overall feels like Green Bay is in a pretty good spot and also going to get some of these guys back in the near future. So that's a great place to be in. And I think the overall health of the team is in a good spot. Number 6, Josh Jacobs is going full beast mode and he's looking like 2022 Josh Jacobs, where he was tearing through the league and he's just able to put the team on his back when needed right now. And even this past week where the offensive line wasn't blocking great in certain situations, some calls that Matt LaFleur readily admitted probably could have been better, he still found ways to win through the passing game and still came up with some explosive plays in that game. So to me, he has been able to, when needed, put the team on his back and say, I got this. I think Jacksonville is a great example of that. And just the way that he is running, the different dynamic that he adds to the offense, Matt LaFleur not being afraid to give it to him 25 times a game, Matt LaFleur building a running attack based off of Josh Jacobs, that's big time stuff. And it has the ability to help you in a major way down the stretch and hopefully going into January and February as well. So Josh Jacobs going beast mode, another great sign for the Packers. Number seven, Rashid Walker is looking like 2023 end of season Rashid Walker. There were some issues earlier in the year, a lot of penalties from Rashid, but especially from a pass blocking standpoint, he has settled into the season. I think he's getting a little bit better here and there at run blocking, but he looks like a legitimately good starting left tackle now. Where at the beginning of this year, it's a little bit shaky from time to time. He's still my lowest graded offensive player on the team, at least going into this past week. Now, that's in large part due to some, again, penalties early in the year, and there's just not many low graded players on offense, but he's getting better, it seems like, week by week. And I'm excited about what that means because you need good offensive line play. And right now, Rashid's giving it to him, and he's really taken a step these past, since the Detroit game. So the past, what, 4 weeks, 3 weeks, whatever it's been, 4 weeks, Detroit, Chicago, San Francisco, Miami. So last 4 weeks, much, much better play from Rashid Walker. Number eight, who the heck are these special teams and what are they doing in Green Bay? We're not used to this. Like, it's crazy to think about right now. If there's a kick return, I'm excited. Keyshawn Nixon's back there. I trust the kick return team. If there's a coverage, like whether they're kicking off or covering a punt, I feel confident in our coverage units and Green Bay's coverage units. If they are punting, I feel great about Daniel Whalen. If they're kicking a field goal, I feel great about Brandon McManus. Like, punt returns still give me a little bit hesitation at times, but outside of that, like, this is a pretty complete special teams group. Just keep it going. And the fact that this special teams pulled out a win for Green Bay, for real? The Packers special teams? That doesn't happen. They're doing their third. They're doing their part. Usually it's like the defense and offense will do enough to cover for the special teams, right? No, the special teams is hanging in there. Even better than that, they're helping Green Bay win. They are legit. The Packers special teams is legitimately helping them win football games. I don't know that I ever thought I'd say it, but it's happening. And that is a huge thing. And that goes to number nine. They're playing complementary football. And it can go in different ways, right? Sometimes the offense is leading to the defense is leading to the offense, good field position by the special teams, you know, pinning them down deep in their end zones, helping out the defense. Like, we're seeing signs of complementary football. But it also can be of, like, you can complement each other in different ways too, right? So if, like, you know, for example, if, you know, your partner's not good at something and you're great at something, that complements each other, right? And vice versa, right? They might be better at something than you are. And again, it you cover for their weakness, they cover for your weakness, and it works out. That's like, that complements each other. I think in, like, the Bears game is a great example of, hey, offense and defense didn't have, you know, had some weaknesses in that game. But the special teams is like, no, we got you. We'll take care of this one. And they block the kick at the end to get the win. And that can be huge too, that you can win in different ways. That it doesn't just have to be, well, if the offense doesn't go for 30, we're going to lose. Or if the defense doesn't hold them to, you know, 13, we're going to lose. If they need it, if they're in a shootout, you know, Green Bay can win those type of games. If it's a defensive struggle, I think Green Bay can win those type of games. And if you need all three phases to be playing together, I think Green Bay can win those type of games. So again, I don't think we've seen a complete game, but we're starting to see a lot more complementary football. And then last but not least, Matt LaFleur mentioned it when he was asked about why this team is looking better and why they're playing their best football. And he said the physicality in all three phases. And I agree with him. This team is playing more physical than we're used to, more physical than we've seen in the past. I know the run game was a little bit of tough sledding at time in this past one, but I think we've seen a more physical run game, especially with Josh Jacobs in there, and more intention and intentionality in going about getting the running game a certain amount of carries per game. There's a physicality in that. You're doing the dictating rather than them rushing the passer and doing the dictating to the offensive line. I think there's power in that. I think the way that they're rallying to the football and hitting and playing more physical defensive football has helped a ton. And I think we saw it on special teams as well. The Aaron Mosby hit on teams this past week is a great example of that. But when you play physical, fast football in all three phases, you're going to be in a pretty good spot. And right now, Green Bay is in a pretty good spot. So the signs that Green Bay is getting ready to peak, and I'll say that it's like the Dennis Reynolds in Always Sunny in Philadelphia of, like, I haven't even begun to peak. I haven't even begun to think about peaking. Like, that's a little bit like that for Green Bay. I don't even think they've been thinking about peaking at this point because they are a young team, the youngest team in football. They're just starting to hit their stride, but I do think there are signs that peak performance might be right around the corner. Healthy Jordan Love, better pressure up front, the breakout of Quay Walker, defense showing signs of gelling as a whole, the overall health of the team, Josh Jacobs going beast mode, Rashid Walker solidifying the left tackle spot, the special teams being a key part of this team, signs of complementary football, and the physicality and intensity in all three phases. Those are the reasons I think this team is starting to peak and hopefully will be peaking come January and February. Shout out today to our All-Pro and Hall of Fame members, Most Hated Minnesotan, PJ Wynn, John Wild, Brandon Paletta, Jennifer Wright, Boom Handle, Donald Lee, Lori Lord, Baby QB, David McCluskey, Donald Decker, Alex Huang, Arnaldo Espinosa, Peter Itaka, SoCal Pack, Jay Zimmerman, B Brown, Puerto Rican Packer, Dan Gesford, Step Keat, Love and Football, and Dylan Patscott. Thank you so much for being here. I'll be right back here tomorrow, so you're not going to want to miss it. Make sure to like, subscribe, comment, give those 5-star reviews. But until next time, and as always, go Pack Go!